So first of all, thank you very much for inviting me to be with you all this morning, especially to families who have come for baptism today. It's a real privilege to be part of this service. Bridget asked if I would talk about lifelong discipleship, lifelong following of Jesus this morning. And so as I was preparing to talk to you, I was thinking about the followers of Jesus that I knew. The ones who were still following Jesus, not at the beginning of their lives, like our baptism children today, but at the end. The ones who were salt and light, even in their 80s and 90s. And I thought I would tell you about one or two of them. There was Clarice. Clarice was 97 by the time I knew her. But when she was in her early 20s, her sister had died, leaving three small children without a mum. So Clarice gave up work and the prospect of a love marriage and instead married a man she didn't really love and brought up those children as her own. Jane grew up in Jamaica in extreme poverty. She had little formal education, and when she was eventually sent to England, she worked in the hospital laundry. Her thriftiness and hard work made it possible for her children to go to university, and in turn, for her grandchildren to be cared for while her children made their way in the world. Both of these women were followers of Jesus, and anyone who knew them knew this about them. Not just because they were good women, but because they were filled with joy despite the hardships they'd endured in their lives. And the joy came from their relationship with Jesus. Clarice was a formidable woman of prayer. She spent time every day in silence. Jane would read her Bible, sometimes struggling to make sense of the words, but reading so that the stories became part of her. She always had a Bible verse to hand, something to strengthen her or to cheer up somebody else. And I began to wonder how it was that Clarice and Jane became such salty people, so filled with God's grace and love. And so we come to our Bible reading this morning, and I want you to picture the scene. Jesus is talking to a crowd of people who've been following him around to hear the wonderful things he says, to see the amazing things he does. And we're not talking about just his closest friends, not just those 12 or so that we sometimes call the disciples, but all the people in the crowd who think Jesus might have something to say to them or to give them. So he looks at the crowd, and my feeling is that every single person there felt like he was talking directly to them as he said to them, "You are the salt of the earth." He didn't have to explain what he meant to that crowd because they knew all about salt, but I'm going to take a short diversion here. In the time of Jesus, salt was a very valuable commodity. Some say that it was as valuable as gold, ounce for ounce or gram for gram. Salt was used to flavor food, but also as a disinfectant, a preservative, as a fixative for dyes. So when Jesus tells his followers that they are salt, he's telling them they're precious, valuable, and useful. You don't need very much salt to be useful. It adds value to anything you mix into it. So Jesus is telling his followers that although they're few in number, they can make a difference in the world. Jesus says, "You are salt. You are a blessing to others. You are a blessing to the world. You are salt. You are valuable to me, and you are valuable to the world." And as you hear those words, I wonder if you might also be reminded of the words that God the Father said to Jesus when he was baptized, and which he says to each one of us as he said it to Hazel and Kobe and Remy this morning. You are my beloved child, in whom I am well pleased. Some people think that Jesus goes on to tell us that we have to work at our saltiness when he talks about salt that's lost its taste. Perhaps we should be careful not to lose our taste. Except that I can tell you, after extensive research on the internet, that salt cannot lose its taste. You can dissolve water, salt in water to a very, very high degree before water doesn't taste salty anymore. So it feels like we've got one of those Jesus paradoxes here, the kind that he was fond of when he would turn people's expectations upside down. Because he's telling us it can't happen. You can't lose your saltiness. You are salty. You should be salty. That's it. Jesus trusts his followers to be salt in the world. There is no other way God can flavor his world except through us. So how are we going to be salt in the world? Well, Clarice and Jane give us some good clues. And I want to talk about being a salty family, being useful salt, and being the salt of the kingdom. Now, I have to tell you that when I was a parish priest, a parish vicar, my salty people, even dear Clarice and Jane, were not necessarily easy people. You might not have liked them too much the first time you met them, but God doesn't make his salty people all the same. He invites us to be his salt in the world, and that makes us family. Again, when I was a vicar, I used to sometimes make people laugh in baptism services by apologizing for the church family into which these new babies and children were joining. We were a bit of a motley crew. Now, I couldn't possibly make that suggestion about the people of St. Peter's. But I'm guessing, and Good Shepherd, but I'm guessing that you are actually very different. That, like in a family, you don't always all like the same food or the same music. I can see that you're not all the same age, that you weren't all born in the same place. Maybe you don't even all speak the same language. But we've all been invited by God to be his family, to love each other and love his world. And that's sometimes hard. Let's be honest. It's often hard, which is why we come to church, to be the family of salty people together, to practice loving God and loving each other. Clarice and Jane were useful salt. They raised children, they taught them well, they loved them patiently, they didn't ask for a reward. And God uses his salty people because he doesn't have any other way of doing good in the world. God needs his salty people to be useful salt, to love his unloved children, to care for his difficult children, to reach out to his lonely children, to feed his hungry children, and to fight for justice for his persecuted children. If we are like that bag of salt shoved to the back of the kitchen cupboard and not useful, we may sometimes need somebody to pull us out and put us to use. And the salty family tries to do this during Lent, to try and remind us to be useful so that we can try to focus together on God's priorities, to work for justice, to feed the hungry, to be welcoming to those in need. That's how together we become the salt of the kingdom. The kingdom is the way that Jesus talks about the world where God rules, a time and place where there's no more suffering, no more injustice, and no more pain. We know that that's not the world that we live in. But remember, you don't need much salt to make a difference. Just a bit of salt. Just one salty person in a workplace. Just one salty person in a family. Just one salty person in a school or a classroom can make a big difference. In fact, too much salt in one place is quite unpleasant. You can't eat neat salt. It'll make you sick. So your saltiness is meant to be spread out Monday to Saturday in the world, not stored up here in church all week. Today, Hazel and Colby and Remy have been welcomed into the family of salty people. God has already promised that they will be a blessing. The task of the rest of us is to encourage them, to remind them of God's priorities as they grow up, to be salt with them. And I pray that one day someone will tell a story about Hazel or Kobe or Remy or one of you, a truly salty person. Amen.